Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, a look at one of the closest, most expensive, most important congressional races in the whole country. We're talking about the 47th District of California, which is Orange County, Newport Beach, Irvine, Costa Mesa, Huntington Beach, all a part of this district. Right now, it's represented by Katie Porter, one of the best-known people in the whole House. When she decided to run for the Senate this year, she had to give up this seat. Her handpicked successor is Dave Minn, who's the state senator for the area, Democrat. Last time around, Porter ran against Scott Baugh, almost won. And he's running again for the third time for Congress. We'll see if he's successful this time. Polls show it's really close, shows Baugh ahead, but within the margin of error. So anybody could win this thing. We really wanted to do a debate. We wanted to pick one congressional race in the state to do a debate. Minn said yes. Baugh's team said, we're interested. Let's work out dates. He started getting dates. And then they decided to say that they just wanted to do a one-on-one because they didn't think that Minn had been fair in public appearances. So that's their right. So we talked to them each separately on the same day. Didn't know, they didn't get to see each other's segments. But this gives you a good sense if you're especially in that district, who to potentially vote for. And even if you're not, it gives you a sense of the main arguments that are happening in these congressional races that could determine who gets control of the House. And almost everybody agrees that control of the House is going to come down to California. It's about 6-7 districts that we're really paying close attention to. And this is certainly one of them close to the top of that list. So let's start with Dave Minn because he wanted to do the debate. We'll let him go first, and then we'll go to Scott Baugh. But let's start with Dave Minn. Now is Democratic State Senator Dave Minn. Senator, welcome to The Issue Is.
Thanks so much for having me, Alex.
Good to see you. We wanted this to be a debate between the two of you.
Yeah.
You said yes. Minn, Baugh initially was thinking about it and then said no, which is too bad.
Yeah, it's unfortunate he chose not to be here today, but I think given the campaign he's running, a campaign that's really built on a lot of deceptions about his own record and statements as well as about my record, I understand why he doesn't want to be here face to face with me.
All right. Well, let's talk about this race, which we're sort of framing as the potential deciding race. So what is the biggest difference, in your view, between a Democratic House and a Republican House?
I mean, the biggest difference is that a Democratic House might actually get something done. This particular Republican House is going to be famous or infamous for being the worst Congress in history of Congresses. And it's a low bar here, but they have done nothing other. They've spent much more time focusing on Hunter Biden's genitalia than they have focusing on the problems that people are actually facing, rising costs. They refused to pass a bipartisan border bill. They've refused to address the real problems that Americans, Orange County families are facing. We also know that if they had control of the Senate and presidency, they would push an extreme agenda that was outlined in Project 2025, including a total ban on abortion starting at conception, a lot of extreme aspects of that agenda.
Well, we don't know that they would pass that agenda in Project 2025. Donald Trump says that he doesn't agree with much of that, and many of the people running are not. But to your point, though, you're going to get something done. What's the number one thing you get done in a Democratic Congress?
Well, for me, I want to set expectations real. Like my role as one of 435 is to elect Hakeem Jeffries. And I think it's to keep going forward on addressing the border crisis, to try to pass more inflation reduction economic policies, policies that work for working families, to try to shore up abortion rights, to try to deal with some of the major challenges we're facing in this country right now, including around gun safety and the climate crisis that is causing ripples around the country right now.
All right, let's go through some of those. Start with the issue of abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any restrictions on abortion that you would support?
Sure. I think the restrictions that Roe v. Wade imposed, I think, you know, sliding scale, including much stricter scrutiny and states being allowed to regulate more in the third trimester. These all make a lot of sense to me. And I think what I'd like to see happen is us restore to the default status quo we had under Roe v. Wade. I think the codification of Roe v. Wade is something I would certainly support should I be elected to Congress.
Okay. On the issue of the border, mm-hmm. We had this bipartisan bill that would have made major changes at the border. Would you have voted for that?
Oh, absolutely. And it was a shame that Republicans held that up because it was a bipartisan bill. The Border Patrol agents themselves pushed for it. It would have added Hundreds or thousands of new border agents provided billions for technology to stop human trafficking, fentanyl trafficking. We have a crisis at our border right now, and we ought to be doing everything we can to stop it.
Republicans say that the president can do a lot of this on his or her own. They point to the fact that Trump did a bunch of executive orders on this. Biden took a lot of that away. Mm-hmm. And then Biden put some of them back this year. And we've seen a drop off in a border crossing since he did that. Do you think that President Biden waited too long?
So, look, I don't want to comment on what President Biden was doing because he's privy to a lot of information I'm not privy to. I will just say that under Donald Trump, we saw a huge increase in border crossings. We saw a huge increase in fentanyl in this country. So to claim that Donald Trump solved the border crisis, this border crisis has been growing my entire lifetime. It's happened. The flow of illegal immigration in this country, the flow of drugs in this country, it's been happening my whole life. I've watched it happen under Democrats and Republicans, Reagan, Clinton, and onwards. So we've got to solve the problem right now, and pointing fingers is not the way to do it. Executive orders clearly are not enough, or Donald Trump would have solved the problem. We're still waiting for that border wall many years later.
But Democrats had full control of Washington at the beginning of the Biden administration, and they didn't pass it. They didn't pass immigration reform when they had even more control during the Obama administration. Don't Democrats bear a lot of the responsibility, too?
Sure. I mean, we have a responsibility to fix problems. And to point fingers, I think, is counterproductive. I will just point out, though, that this particular House of Representatives is going to go down in history as being one of the least productive, maybe the most least productive Congress in history. So we have to start trying to make progress. I think the bipartisan border bill would have been a good start. Does it solve all our problems? No. And frankly, part of the problem is that we have a lot of guns flowing down to Mexico and South America right now that are fueling the violence, the gang violence that is driving people to come to this country right now.
Scott Boss says his number one priority is fixing fentanyl crisis. Mm-hmm. He blames a lot of that on what's happening at the border. What's your understanding on that issue?
I'm sorry.
In terms of fentanyl, what would you do to fix that crisis if you're elected?
Yeah, and so I have a record in the state Senate of actually trying to act on this. I voted for every bill to criminalize the trafficking of fentanyl. We have to start going after the suppliers. Of course, we have to tighten up our border. And you know, just wishing problems away doesn't solve them. Obviously, we have to take action. And one of the things that we have as legislators, and I will just compare my legislative record to Scott Boss's legislative record, I have passed 31 bills and counting right now. There's about five or six more on the governor's desk I hope he will sign to try to address the problems that families are facing. And should I be elected to Congress, I will continue to vote for productive solutions to these problems. Scott Boss is famous as someone who is a do-nothing politician who is in it to enrich himself. As you know, he was indicted for 22 counts of campaign finance fraud and bribery and related charges when he was an elected official. So to think that he's going to do something to help solve problems, I think, belies his past history.
He would say that those were later dismissed and that there was a whole
but
process.
That would be false. He actually pled guilty. What happened is that they were thrown out on a technicality, reshifted to the FCCP, and he pled guilty to 9 violations of the California Elections Code. He paid a $50,000 fine for violating the law. There's no question he broke the law. The question is whether he should have been guilty of 4 felony counts. And I think the district attorney and many people watching believe he did violate felony statutes at that time.
Let's talk about the issue of guns. Mm-hmm. You have been one of the legislators who has been most successful in passing restrictions, one of which was just upheld by the courts this week. Mm-hmm. As a legislator in Congress, do you see that something that you would focus on? What sort of federal gun rules do you want to see?
Absolutely. We have a gun crisis in this country, a gun violence epidemic. And it's sad when we see the statistics that now the number one killer of children in the United States of America, it's not drugs, it's not traffic accidents, it's not swimming accidents, it is guns. Gun violence is a scourge in this country. It is preventable. And I think we have to start with the common sense solutions of limiting access to weapons of war, having more robust background checks, preventing people who are high propensity murderers and criminals, including those who have committed domestic violence, from having access to guns. But when we make it so easy that 13-year-olds can go out and get an arsenal of AR-15s and Glocks and weapons that in other countries are reserved for soldiers, for professional members of the Army and armed services, we allow everyone in this country to have that, and we're surprised that gun violence is at epidemic levels. It's common sense, I think, and we need to start pushing back. And I'm proud to have the support of every gun violence prevention group in this race.
Scott Boss says that you're soft on crime. He points to the fact that you supported an end of cash bail, suppressing records for those who are convicted of felonies. Mm-hmm. He says that you've contributed to some of these problems that we've seen. He blames Prop 47 for part of it in mm-hmm. terms of the retail theft. What do you say to the allegation that you're soft on crime?
It's a ridiculous talking point that if you look around the country, look around California, every Republican running against a Democrat is running on the same issue. We're all soft on crime. In this case, it just doesn't fly. The dog won't hunt. I'm someone who spent my career upholding the rule of law. My very first job was law enforcement. It was prosecuting Wall Street. At a time when Scott Baugh was breaking the law, I was going after lawbreakers. I've taught the rule of law at UC Irvine before becoming a state senator. I'm someone who's going to continue upholding the rule of law. And I will just say that this is a ridiculous talking point. I was the first Democratic legislator, as I think you reported, to break with the governor and Democrats on retail theft. I supported the district attorney's measure to try to reform the retail theft initiative that was passed 10 years ago. That is going to be on the ballot. I have been very strongly in support of police and the rule of law. And I will just note that Scott Baugh has refused to condemn the events of January 6th, in which four Capitol Police officers died. I'm wearing this pin because I want to stand in solidarity with police officers. I'm proud to be the only candidate in this race endorsed by law enforcement organizations. And there's a reason for that, because only one of us has stood with police. Only one of us has stood with law enforcement in this race, and that is not Scott Baugh.
You've been endorsed by Katie Porter. You've known Katie Porter since your law school days. You ran against Katie Porter for Congress once. She's obviously been the legislator now for a while for the district. Is there anything policy-wise that you would do differently than Katie Porter?
I like to say that Katie Porter taught with a whiteboard. I taught with PowerPoint when we were colleagues at UC Irvine. True story.
There's literally her whiteboard right there.
There we go. Yeah. I don't have a PowerPoint. It's not quite as sexy, not as telegenic, but I think there's a lot of differences. I think I will just note that, of course, I do have law enforcement's backing, and that is something that Katie, for whatever reason, did not have in her race. I haven't gone back and looked at all of her votes, but I suspect there would be some differences. I'm strong, like her, on the issues of abortion rights, on climate, on guns, and on standing up to hate. And that is something that I think Katie Porter did that was underappreciated. At a time when hate, when xenophobia, when attacks on people based on their racial, ethnic, religious, or other identities are at an all-time high in our lifetimes, we need elected officials who are going to stand up and condemn that hate. And that is something that I've been known to do as well in the state Senate. That is something we have to do at a time when, unfortunately, right now, people like Donald Trump and Scott Baugh are demonizing diversity, demonizing immigrants, touting xenophobia and hate. We have to stand up and fight back and reclaim the values of America, because America is better than Donald Trump. It is better than Scott Baugh. It is better than hate.
You're out in the district talking to people every single day. It's quite a process running for Congress. It's grueling. I don't know how you guys do it, and I don't know how you raise that much money, but that's a whole other thing. But what is maybe the biggest lesson you've learned from somebody in your district, maybe surprise or something that you've taken away that's changed your worldview through this process of running?
I came into office in the state Senate right at the beginning of COVID. And you remember those times. They were tough on all of us. And I remember someone coming up to me maybe about 2 years after all that went down and just came up to me. I was actually shopping at my local grocery store. And they came up to me and said, "You saved our family." And I was like, "Oh, that's unusual. Like, what do you mean?" Apparently, my district staff had helped her get her unemployment benefits. And that had allowed them to make their mortgage payment, had allowed them to stay in their homes, had allowed them to feed themselves. We were able to get their EDD. And we remember the unemployment system here in California is having lots of problems. But my staff has helped over 4,000 families get EDD benefits during that time period. And it was just kind of an eye-opening shock to me. We all talk about the importance of public service, the importance of trying to help other people. But to see that viscerally, to feel like that we actually potentially saved someone from a very dark alternative path, that was the power of public service. That was just amazing, an amazing moment for me. It made me really emotional about the role that we can play when we try to do good things through our public institutions.
So if you had to make a real short, concise closing argument, what is it?
Look, the values here are very clear. You have a candidate in me who has a record of serving the public versus someone who has spent his career trying to enrich himself. You have clear differences on the abortion issue. You have someone who is 100% backed by Planned Parenthood versus someone who wants a federal blanket ban on abortion starting at conception with no exceptions. And you have someone who is fighting MAGAism versus someone who has literally said he is 100% with Donald Trump, who has refused to acknowledge Joe Biden. Scott Paul has refused to acknowledge Joe Biden as the rightfully elected president of the United States. He does not believe in evolution. I believe in science. So there's very clear differences in this race. I hope voters will see past the lies and deception and the fear-mongering of my opponent and vote for progress, vote for hope, vote for a better future, because that's what this election is ultimately about.
And just for the record, Baugh would say that he is personally opposed to abortion but does not support abortion restrictions. That's what he says.
And he has said that, and that is probably why he's not here, because we actually have the receipts. And so, as you noted, Scott Baugh ducked our debate because he is trying to refashion himself and take back and mitigate statements he's made. But he actually told NBC News in August of 2022 he supports a federal ban on abortion. He has said repeatedly that he does not support abortion in any form, that life begins at conception. He supports a blanket ban on abortion. He, in fact, was named on the Orange County pro-family candidate list four times, 2008, 2010, 2012, 2018, as supporting a federal abortion ban with no exceptions for rape or incest. So he, of course, is trying to backtrack right now. He's not debating me for a reason, because he is lying about what he has said in the past, and he does not want to be called out on it.
Okay, let's end with something fun. So
this was kind of fun for me, I gotta say.
Personal issues, which is what we do. 30 seconds on the clock, your favorite cultural things. First thing that comes to mind, all right, ready?
Sure.
What's your favorite TV show?
Oh, geez, right now, I gotta say, the Game of Thrones spinoff, which I'm forgetting the name, House of the Dragon.
Yeah, favorite movie?
Oh, shoot, it's gotta be Zoolander.
Oh, okay, band or musician?
I am listening right now to an old school band called The Wedding Present from the 80s, like British punk.
What's your favorite restaurant in Orange County?
Oh, shoot, there's so many to choose from. I think my family and I appreciate hot pot nowadays. Our kids are really into it.
And who is your role model?
My role model is really my mom. My mom was someone who grew up, had adversity her whole life. And I only appreciate this now as an adult, but through her career, she was one of the leading semiconductor executives in her industry. She worked at some really amazing companies and really hit a glass and bamboo ceiling. She must have faced a lot of discrimination because she was typically the only woman, the only minority in the room at that time in the 80s and 90s. And yet she never complained about it to us. Like, we heard about it a little bit offhand, but she was always home at 6 p.m. to make us dinner. That was a different time, of course. And she is amazing. So thank you, Mom.
All right. Shout out to Mom. That's a great way to end. Thank you so much,
Thank
Senator.
You,
great to
Appreciate
see you.
It.
Different view. Scott Baugh, when we come back, you're watching The Issue Is.
Thank you. I grabbed my coffee, by the way. I don't know if that's good or bad, but
thank you. Our thanks to Dave Min. Now to Scott Baugh and his perspective. Let's start with an ad that he recently put out.
In Congress, my first priority is solving the fentanyl epidemic. Washington divides us, but there's more that unites us. Brandy was my brother. I'll try being yours as well.
That's the latest ad from Republican congressional candidate Scott Baugh talking about losing his brother to fentanyl in 2020. Scott joins us now in studio. Welcome back to The Issue Is.
Good to be with you, Alex.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry for the loss of your brother. Why was it so important for you to talk about that?
Well, I lost my brother in 2020, and we never brought this up in the 2022 election. But since then, we've had hundreds of thousands of families been torn apart by fentanyl poisonings. We have 120,000 deaths in 2023 from drug overdoses. This is fentanyl coming across the southern border, and it's tearing families apart. And there's a lot of pain out there, and we just think it needs to be addressed and stopped.
And to that point, you say that's going to be your number one priority. What specific policy-wise are you going to do differently than Dave Min when it comes to fentanyl?
Well, first of all, Dave Min believes in open borders. I don't believe in open borders. I believe in a secure border and then robust immigration that's legal. But if we secure our border, you stop all this fentanyl that's coming in. That's number one. Number two, there's a drug, It's called naloxone. It's a drug, a reversal agent, if you will, that allows people to come out of this deep coma they go into with fentanyl. And we just need to have more education on that and more fentanyl or more naloxone distributed out into the community.
Yeah, and it really is amazing how that saves lives if somebody has it in the right moment. So let's talk about the border a little bit.
Sure.
You were not a supporter of that bipartisan border bill that came out last year. What specifically do you think you could get passed and signed if you were a member of Congress on the border?
Well, specifically, about 90% of it can be done with administrative orders, which is why you didn't have a lot of illegal immigration when Trump was president, and you had 15 million come in when Joe Biden is president. So a lot of it's going to be cleaned up with administrative orders if Trump wins. And then secondarily, you need funding to finish the wall. Now, I don't think you need a wall from end to end, but you certainly need a wall in certain places. And again, my philosophy is a tall fence and a wide gate, because we are a generous country. We allow a lot of immigration in here, but it has to be legal, because illegal immigration brings drugs, it brings a sex trafficking, and it brings terrorism. We know there's terrorists. 2 million gotaways got in here, and we know there's going to be something bad that happens because of these policies that have allowed 15 million people to come in.
Supporters of that bipartisan immigration bill last year, including Kamala Harris, say that would have been tough on immigration. It would have increased border funding. It would have increased help to the Border Patrol. It would have increased technology to the area. What's wrong with it?
Elix, that border bill allowed 1 million new people to come in every year. It was a bit of a pig and a poke, and I think I explained that to you last time we were here. It was more of a facade to pretend you were doing something as opposed to real action that needs to be done on our border.
Another big issue in this election is abortion. The MIN campaign points to a quote that you gave the LA Times back in 1998, which is quite simply, "I do not support abortion in any form." Is that your view? Can you clarify what your view is on abortion?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that question. I'm a pro-life guy. I'm personally pro-life. But my personal views on that don't reflect what I do as a policymaker. I don't think the federal government should step in and ban abortion at all. Dave Mann's running ads that are just lies about what I would do. The state of California has enshrined in our Constitution women's health and the right to choose in our Constitution. Mm-hmm. I would never let the federal government come in and overrule that and overrule the will of the people of California.
So this idea of a potential 15-week national abortion ban, which has been pushed by some Republicans, that's not something you would vote for?
I don't think so. I wouldn't vote for that, because I think what you're doing is you're trying to create a one-size-fits-all solution for every state in this nation. And the states are sorting this out and working it out. California is more liberal on it. Other states are less liberal on it. But let the states sort this out. Because if the feds get in and do a one-size-fits-all solution, they're probably going to get it wrong for somebody. They're going to get it wrong for this state or that state. So let the states sort it out.
Okay. Let's talk about Donald Trump for a moment. That's something else the MIN campaign often tries to tie you to. Are there any specific policies that you disagree with him on?
Oh, well, sure. On trade policies, there's sort of a populism that goes on with some of Donald Trump's policies. But at the end of the day, I'm a constitutional conservative. I believe we should follow the Constitution. And if it's in the Constitution, let's follow that constitutional document. But if it's not, let's not play the game. And I think that with trade policy and trade wars, it's not healthy. It ultimately hurts the American consumer.
What would your relationship be with him? What would you want to work with him on? How would you see Trump if he's president?
Well, so I've never met Mr. Trump, and I am voting for him. But I'm going to advance what I need to advance in Congress, whether it's spending restrictions, because we have $35 trillion in debt, and it's going up $2 trillion every year. We need to get on top of that, because our debt-to-GDP ratio is inverted. We have to stop that. We're stealing from the next generation. So I would work on those things a lot and hopefully bring a package to him that he can sign.
On the issue of guns, we know that Dave Mann has been active in the state Senate in pushing for different gun control measures, some of which just were upheld by the courts this week. What do you see as the federal role when it comes to guns? Do we need more restrictions?
Well, Elix, we've seen that gun control laws, you can outlaw an AR 16 times. It's not going to change what's happening out there. The gun laws are on the books. We just need to enforce them. We need to make sure we do more red flag laws and make sure that people that have mental illness or have a criminal background never get a gun. But this leads into the crime issue, and I hope you want to cover the crime issue a bit, because we have a proliferation of crime in this county, Orange County. We've had a murder at Fashion Island. We had a murder at Huntington Beach, like two blocks from where I was having dinner the other night. And a friend of mine just got shot at South Coast Plaza Mall last Sunday because somebody wanted to do a smash and grab. These are out of control policies that are brought on by Dave Mann. And I can tell you all of the bills he supported: no cash bail, suppressing the felony records of people who have felonies on their records. He voted for a bill that made it more difficult for the police to investigate sex crimes, including sex crimes with 11-year-old girls.
So from a crime perspective in the House, what are you going to do?
Well, first of all, you have to make sure you don't allow this progressive, I call it a regressive infection, hit the federal judiciary. And we need to make sure that, like, for example, the trafficking of children coming across our border is stopped. That's what you can do at the federal level.
Just to wrap up on the gun thing, though, is there any other gun restrictions that you would support? Background checks.
Oh, sure. We support. You should do background checks. Yeah. Nobody that has a mental health history or a criminal background should ever have access to a gun. So we don't disagree on that at all.
In terms of Dave Mann wanted to debate you, we had hoped to have this be a debate with the two of you on the set together. Why the decision not to debate him?
Well, we've made several decisions, agreements to debate. In fact, in Orange County, not up here in L.A., but in Orange County, and Dave Mann has backed out of two of them. And so he says, I backed out of a debate. That's nonsense. We've never agreed to do anything here, but we did in Orange County. And just yesterday, I got a note from Speak Up Newport that said Dave Mann has agreed, or he said he's not going to participate in that debate. So I'm willing to do it. He's not willing. He's playing games with it.
Well, if you want to do one in Orange County, I'm happy to moderate.
Oh, come on down to Orange.
I'd be happy to do it there. You know, you've been campaigning now for this job. You campaigned against Katie Porter. You spend so much time in the district talking to people every single day from all walks of life. What's the biggest lesson you've learned from maybe somebody that you've met that's shaped your worldview?
Well, when I knock on doors, I walk every weekend and I talk to the people. The three biggest issues that come up are crime. Irvine in particular is one of the safest big cities in the country. Mm-hmm. And people are now bringing up crime all the time. You had 33 burglaries there. You have these smash and grabs going on and you have murders. And it's like, that's not normal in Orange County. It's certainly not normal in Irvine. And now it's becoming a regular headline in our papers. And so that's probably the most interesting thing I've heard, where people are actually now afraid. They want safe neighborhoods and strong families, and they don't have it right now.
And in terms of on a personal level, have you been changed maybe by being out there on the campaign trail and talking to a lot of these folks?
Oh, sure. In fact, when I did my commercial, a lot of people bring it up and they talk about their own tragedy. So many people have told me about, in fact, two today told me about losing a brother to fentanyl. And so there's pain in this community. But the good news is we can stop it. We can stop the flow of fentanyl. And, you know, again, if fentanyl were bullets, it would be outlawed. But we just need to make sure we secure our border so we don't bring those poisoning drugs into our community.
And if you had to make a real quick closing argument, what would it be?
Hey, the future of the direction, the free world's really at stake here. Control of Congress is very narrow, and we have to make sure that we set this country back on the right course. We need to be tough on our criminals. We need to enforce the criminal statutes. We need to get control of our debt, and we need to secure our southern border.
And what is the biggest single difference between a Republican House and a Democratic House?
Well, a Democrat House probably would engage in impeachment of Donald Trump once a week just to obstruct everything. But the Democrat House will want more spending and open borders and less enforcement of the criminal statutes. The Republican House wants to be tough on crime. They want to get our debt under control, and they want to secure our border.
Lastly, we do something called personal issues on this show to get to know you. These are rapid fire questions, cultural favorites. So let's see what you got. All right, ready? 30 seconds on the clock. What's your favorite TV show?
TV show. I don't have a favorite.
The issue is. Okay, favorite movie?
Shawshank Redemption.
Favorite musician or band?
The Silver Bullet Band, Bob Seger.
What's your favorite way to relax?
Oh, I do picture books. That's my hobby. I take a lot of pictures and I put them together in albums.
What's the best restaurant in Orange County?
Oh, I like Alessa.
Okay, and who is your role model?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan, why is that?
Because he believes in hope and prosperity for the American people by getting government out of the way and letting the American people be free, because when the American people are free, there's nothing they can't accomplish.
All right. Well, as you just heard, there's a big difference between Dave Minn and Scott Baugh. And voters, it's up to you to figure out which one is in line with you. Thank you so much for coming here.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Hopefully we can do something in Orange County. Our thanks to Scott Baugh and to Dave Minn. We'll be highlighting more races in the coming weeks. But now we want to highlight something that we did this week for PPIC, the Public Policy Institute of California, up in Sacramento. I traveled up there this week for a special panel that I was honored to moderate with some of my friends. And it was in front of a studio audience. Not really a studio audience. It was a luncheon with hundreds of people in the room, but it was really special. And they're really smart people and some of our favorites on the show. And here's a package putting together some of the best of. What do you say to Californians who may be concerned seeing this, that it's going to make their lives more expensive?
Well, it's just the opposite. They're ripping you off. Big Oil has been ripping you off and then lying to you.
Governor Newsom slamming Big Oil while signing a series of bills this week restricting drilling. The governor's fight over energy, one of many topics discussed during a special panel I was honored to host in Sacramento this week. I couldn't book a better panel than this. So
on the Public Policy Institute of California panel, KQED's Marissa Lagos, San Francisco Chronicle's Joe Garofoli, and Politico's Melanie Mason. We discuss Kamala Harris, the first ever Democratic presidential nominee from California.
The state of California is a mess.
And Donald Trump, a Republican nominee with a very different view of California's leadership.
We're on one path. California really is in the doghouse. You've lost a lot of congressional seniority, and you have a president who is fundamentally opposed to a lot of the policy paths that lawmakers here are taking. And on the other way, you have the strongest ally and advocate and native daughter.
She's not going to talk about it, though. She doesn't like to mention us very much.
Well,
no,
let's talk about that, because she was not the California governor, and she wasn't involved in all the homelessness policy and all of the sort of mess that Newsom has to deal with every day. She's kind of been like this a little bit, right?
Even if we weren't in this moment with the homeless crisis and a lot of the other challenges, she still would be trying to distance herself, especially from her hometown of the Bay Area. I mean, Berkeley has like the berserkly, you know, reputation. Oakland has long struggled with higher crime rates.
When we were at the DNC, on one night, the California Democratic Party is celebrating her as daughter of California with, you know, literally with the logos and selling T-shirts, daughter of California. The next day, she gets up and, you know, she says, I grew up in, you know, the Bay.
That video.
The Bay.
Just
she wouldn't even say Oakland or Berkeley. Say our name, Oakland, Berkeley. You take the money, but say our name.
Petra Norris, aye.
We also discussed this week's special legislative session advancing legislation pushed by Governor Newsom to regulate oil refineries. Newsom wants to require refiners to keep more reserves to prevent sudden gas price spikes if refineries go offline. But some legislators say they're confused by what the plan is.
He doesn't have the votes for whatever he wants to do. And lawmakers, I mean, it's rare that you see them saying, I'm confused by, a lot of the reports are,
also,
I'm confused
I'm on
by
the
what
ballot
this is.
Next.
Gas prices obviously are a very potent political issue. They aren't so much right now,
which is what's so fascinating about it.
Gas prices are actually not that bad right now. I don't know if you are a member that has a tough election race. Not only are you being called back up to Sacramento and off of the campaign trail while you're on the ballot, but also you're having the governor remind people about gas prices in a moment where it's not actually the top of the list.
We also talk about Prop 36, the effort to amend California's Prop 47 and increase penalties for repeat thefts and drug abuse. A recent PPIC poll shows 71% of California voters support the effort. Just 26% oppose it.
Across party lines, across demographic lines, across geographic lines, people are fed up and they want an answer.
And the fact that I saw a poll today and so 70% of people want to support it, I was wondering what state I was living in.
Governor Newsom and most statewide Democrats opposed 36.
If these politicians are being honest with themselves, there should be a bit of a come to Jesus moment. Like, where was the disconnect? How did we drop the ball on this one?
Another opponent of 36, LADA George Gascon, who helped write Prop 47 10 years ago.
Gascon facing a tough re-election fight against challenger Nathan Hochman.
What's been so striking to me is how under the radar
that
race has felt. Maybe it's Prop 36 kind of sucked all the oxygen out of the room and maybe attracted that attention, but the contrast to what we saw in San Francisco when Chesa Boudin was up for recall and what that meant, we had all of these big picture, like, what does this mean for criminal justice reform? You're not seeing that conversation in LA.
Maybe that race isn't that close, so it's hard to get oxygen. You think about George Gascon. He, in the past, was endorsed by Gavin Newsom, by Kamala Harris, by Rob Bonta, by Adam Schiff, and none of those people
radio silence
have come to his defense now.
Very cool. You can check out the PPIC YouTube page to watch the full panel, and it's worth diving into. Next week, we've got quite a show. Tommy Lahren and Brian Tyler Cohen are back for a debate. The first two versions of that were some of the highest rated, most clicked on episodes we ever did. So we look forward to next week. A lot to talk about. Plus, for the anniversary of October 7th, we talked to former Facebook Meta COO Sheryl Sandberg, who's got this very moving documentary out about October 7th and some of the sexual violence that happened there. We sit down with her at the Museum of Tolerance next week on a star-studded episode of The Issue Is. Also next week, there's going to be a VP debate. And so on Tuesday night, right afterwards, we're doing a live edition of The Issue Is with Lisa Bloom and John Cobalt and Melanie Mason. You can watch that live on Fox 11 at 7:30 p.m. Also streaming live on the Fox Local app. We'll put it on YouTube as well. So that'll be an instant analysis. So next week, two episodes of The Issue Is. We'll see you then for that. In the meantime, thanks for listening this week.